This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who is brought to you by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website, doctorwho.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show. These are The Secrets of Doctor Who, episode number 6.
I'm a doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years.
I am Scottish. I can complain about things.
Shush.
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who, in which we can either complain or praise, or both at the same time, the newest episode of Doctor Who Series 6, right? And today... Eight already. Mm-hmm. I'm losing count with all the time traveling. Episode number 6, called The Caretaker. And today we've got a full panel rejoining us, Stephanie.
Hello.
Good to have you on the show again. She is also the host of a very successful podcast for all you TV junkies called TV Rewind. Also joining us from the western part of the United States, Mr. Jimmy Akin.
Howdy, Father.
The author, among one of the many, many, many things that Jimmy does, of a blog about the entire collection of Doctor Who episodes, going through them one by one. And so you are thereby our own, like, TARDIS archive whenever we need information about those early shows.
To a limited extent, yeah. And that blog is letswatchdoctorwho.com.
Exactly. Also joining us, a fellow priest, because I'm a Father Roderick from the Netherlands, but joining us from the United States, Father Corey.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Had a busy weekend, but today is a good day to kind of relax and recover.
Father Corey, for those of you that are not watching the live stream, because we're always streaming this live on Mondays, when I call you on Skype, Father Corey, you're the only priest in the world that I know that has a Minecraft avatar.
I joke that's me trapped in, if I got trapped in Minecraft, but you notice I'm holding a book, so I've got my breviary with me.
No. So at least you have something to do when you hide from the zombies and whatever else is roaming
exactly
there in the middle of the night. And finally, from Boston, joining us, my fellow co-host from The Secrets of Star Wars, Dom Bettinelli.
May the Force be with you.
Oh, and also with you.
I have a bad feeling about this.
All right, let's make no more Star Wars jokes, because otherwise we'll alienate our audience, because here on this show we talk about Doctor Who, and as I mentioned in the introduction, today we're going to talk about and analyze episode number 6, The Caretaker. And just to put us in the mood again, I'll just play the sound of the American trailer. It's very funny that you have like a British version of the trailer for the next episode, and then there's an American one. The American one is a little bit more, how will I put it, more American.
On the next Doctor Who.
Every time I see you, it's like you're...
What?
In a rush, in a state.
How's you? Sorry I'm late.
Who are you having dinner with?
I can't keep doing this. The next few days are all about you.
I'm the new caretaker, John Smith.
Welcome to Colville, Mr. Smith.
Thanks.
Problem. Solution. Destroy.
An all-new episode of Doctor Who, Saturday at 9, only on BBC America.
Subscribe now to the BBC America YouTube channel for exclusive Doctor Who videos and more.
Yeah, it even has a special appearance of Capaldi. That's pretty cool. They don't get that in the UK. So, Jimmy, can you refresh our memory and tell us what was new on this all-new episode of Doctor Who?
Sure. So this is the episode that we've kind of been waiting for, where the Doctor and Danny Pink finally meet each other. And they've been setting that up for a while. They introduced Danny Pink at the beginning of the series as a former soldier and school teacher at the same school that Clara teaches at. And they also introduced the fact that Peter Capaldi's Doctor really has an intense dislike of soldiers, unlike some previous Doctors. And so you could kind of predict there was going to be fireworks when the two finally met, and there were. in this episode, it begins with Clara bouncing back and forth between adventures with the doctor and teaching school and having dates with Danny. And it's kind of frenetic. We have an interesting opening montage where she's just really lurching from one extreme to another and is having a little bit of difficulty keeping balance in her life as a result. Then one day she goes onto the TARDIS to have an adventure with the doctor, and he shuts her out. He tells her there's not going to be an adventure today, that he's got something to do, it's going to take a while, he's going under deep cover. And he basically puts her out of the TARDIS. So after being rebuffed by the doctor, she naturally turns to Danny and tells Danny that the next few days are going to be all about him, and she's going to be able to devote her attention to their relationship. Then the doctor appears as the new caretaker of Coal Hill School, a caretaker meaning basically janitor or custodian. And so Clara is immediately alarmed and deduces correctly that the school is in some kind of danger. And that's why the doctor is there on his deep cover mission, deep cover involving wearing a janitor's uniform. Confirms that she's right, there is a danger, and he's here to stop it. And the danger turns out to be a kind of predator-looking wheelchair battle robot crab thing known as the Scovox Blitzer. And according to the doctor, it is powerful enough to blow up the planet. And it proves that it is at least powerful enough to blow up a policeman, because that's what it then proceeds to do. A policeman discovers where it's hiding, and we quickly have, you know, crispy fried policeman, just to show the thing's power. The doctor says that the Scovox Blitzer has been drawn to the school by Artron emissions, and said they've had a number of those over recent years, and we can talk about what those are after the summary. He also has been hiding devices around the school to lure the Scovox Blitzer to where he can get it into an ambush and project it a billion years in the future where it can't hurt anything. He also has an invisibility watch that he wants to use to prevent the thing from tracking him as he lures it into the ambush. In the process of setting up the devices for the battle crab, the doctor meets Danny Pink for the first time and learns he's a soldier. He does not, however, learn that he is Clara's boyfriend at this point. Instead, he meets another teacher named Adrian, who wears a bow tie and has long stringy hair and looks rather a lot like the 11th Doctor. Yes. And he assumes that's who Clara is dating. Clara, meanwhile, gets the mistaken impression that he realizes she's dating Danny Pink, the apparent ancestor of Colonel Orson Pink that we met a couple of episodes ago at the end of the universe. So you have some nice comedy with the two of them mistakenly thinking they're on the same wavelength about who she's dating, when in fact they're not. So then Danny starts following the doctor. He realizes he's been slinking around doing something, and so he starts following him, and he ends up ruining the ambush of the Scovox Blitzer. And it does get sucked into the future, but not a billion years into the future, just 3 days. Danny also, at this point, comes face-to-face with the doctor and Clara and realizes that there's something really weird going on here, and he demands to know what it is. He deduces that it's somehow connected with aliens, and so they reveal that the doctor is indeed an alien. At first he's concerned that Clara is an alien and that the doctor is her space dad, but she makes it clear, no, she's from Blackpool. She's a human being. But they show him the TARDIS, and he really has to think about this. He becomes very concerned and talks to Clara privately about how she's been lying to him. And if you watch earlier in the episode, that's actually true. It isn't just that she's been concealing her life with the doctor from him. She's actually been lying to cover it up.
Yeah.
So he's concerned that he doesn't know who she is, and so she gives him the invisibility watch to enable him to observe her and the doctor on the TARDIS as they are together. So he can see that she's the same regardless of who she's with. This then blows up in her face because the doctor realizes that there's an invisible Danny, and Danny decloaks and then stands up to the doctor in a really dramatic way, calling him an aristocrat and an officer. He admits, "I'm a soldier, but he's an officer," which really gets the doctor mad, and he throws Danny off of the TARDIS. The robot then proceeds to rematerialize early, endangering parents' night at the school. Danny, Clara, and the doctor manage to lure it into a situation where it shuts itself down and everybody is safe. Then we get a shot of the doctor out in space letting loose the Scovox Blitzer in its dormant state. And with him is a girl that we met earlier in the episode named Courtney Wood, who is a young student at Cole Hill School and has been tagged as being a disruptive influence, which, of course, makes her a soulmate to the doctor. And he's kind of flirting with the idea of having her as a companion as well, perhaps, and except she then gets space sick on her first trip on the TARDIS, literally, and throws up, though fortunately we don't see that. We then cut back to Earth, where Danny and Clara are relaxing, and it's kind of an ambivalent moment as they're watching television, because the revelation about the doctor has thrown a big wrench in their relationship, and Danny and the doctor don't really like each other at this point, but they're kind of tolerating each other. And Danny tells Clara that he's served under officers like the doctor before, and they can push you and make you capable of things you didn't know you could do, but they can also push you too far. And he makes her promise solemnly that if the doctor ever pushes her too far, she will tell him so that he can help her. And he says, if you don't, that's the end of our relationship. So we have a kind of ominous note there that clearly is pointing to the future. Finally, we shift over to the nether sphere and discover that the cop that the Scovox Blitzer crisped has survived into the afterlife. And so we have our mid-season appearance very briefly of Missy and another member of her team introducing this guy to the afterlife. And that's the end.
And that other person in the afterlife, or in that big white corridor, is actually a former co-star of Capaldi in The Thick of It.
His name is
Chris Addison. So they've worked together, which makes a lot of people assume that he'll have a recurring role. They're not just a cameo. It's probably a little bit more important than that. But anyway, we'll talk about the implications of that last final surprising scene, perhaps towards the end of our episode. What is this afterlife? Who is Missy? What's going on? Why is she all of a sudden very busy and seems to have no time? But first, as usual, I want to make the rounds and ask you for your initial impression and how you would rate this episode. And Stephanie, since we've not heard your voice for a couple of episodes, how do you see, what was your overall impression of this new season of Doctor Who, and how would you compare this episode to the ones preceding it?
Well, I obviously haven't been on since the very beginning, but episodes 1 through 3 were okay for me. Mm-hmm. They left much to be desired, in my opinion. But then we got to Listen, and then the next two episodes. And I really felt like the whole thing rejuvenated for me. New energy, really exciting. And the wonderful things about this show that I've enjoyed so much came back. And it's giving me new hope about this season.
Good.
So I'm very excited to see where it's going at this point. To repeat something that I saw on Twitter this weekend, someone else had said that this trio of episodes is the first time that he, in a long time, could have watched 3 episodes in a row that he adored so much. And I definitely agree with that. So I'm really excited about where we're going from here. So high praise, I would say a 9 on this one.
Wow, that's definitely high praise. What about you, Father Corey?
Admittedly, I wasn't as enthused about this episode. I mean, it was... I felt it very much was the Danny Pink meets the doctor episode. Mm-hmm. And of course, they kind of follow a standard thing of they meet the doctor, they're shell-shocked at meeting this alien, not expecting that there are aliens. But then by the end, he steps up and at least, you know, shows his worth to the doctor. And I kind of feel like that's what this was. This whole purpose of this blitzer was just to so that they could have that scene with Danny Pink doing the backflip over him.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it was a fun episode. Some of the kids were kind of interesting. It was kind of fun to see the especially interaction with the doctor and that Courtney, because I think he kind of had to deal with his own issues around children and stuff like that with her. But it was I wouldn't call it the best episode of the season, at least not in my opinion. I probably would give it a 6 at the worst and maybe a mm-hmm. 7 at the best.
All right, sure. What about you, Dom?
I would say I'll give my number up front and then I'll talk a little about why I give it that. I'd give it a 7, which makes it a little behind the last episode with the heist, the time heist. Now, I looked at this, I said, you know, the caretaker, the name of the episode. I'd love to talk more about it, but it kind of encapsulated for me what this is about. This is about people who take care of one another, and or more to the point, how both Danny and the doctor care for and want to take care of Clara, and how Clara is sort of the caretaker for the doctor in a limited sense with Danny. So I found that very interesting. This is in comparison to last week's caper, the heist caper, the mm-hmm. the classic genre. This was the comedic farce, a very British comedic farce sort of episode. The music, the misunderstandings, the back and forth, and I enjoyed that. The only reason I give it a 7 instead of maybe an 8 is it really annoys me when you have giant plot holes. You know, the whole gimmick of we've only got 24 hours to fix this, and now it's 5 minutes. What could I possibly do?
Mm-hmm.
You could get in your TARDIS and go to another time and spend years fixing the darn thing and come back, like you just proposed you would do with Clara. I have a hard time, you know, suspending disbelief beyond a certain point. And so that kind of annoyed me enough to knock it down a point.
But it wasn't even any techno babble explaining why they couldn't use the TARDIS, which was something they would do in Star Trek. It's like, well, there is a temporary disruption of our field, so we can't make this jump to hyperspace, but...
Right. Well, the standard Doctor Who reason you can't jump, you know, back and forth in time is this time lock idea, which I mm-hmm. still haven't got, you know, my mind around when it applies and when it doesn't. And frankly, I think it's just when the writer decides for dramatic purposes,
sure.
You can't go there. So you know, they didn't even do that because they had, you know, recently you know, they had the doctor say to Clara that we could jump back and forth and go anywhere and be back in time. The other thing is just a part of it that really felt like a signature to me of Stephen Moffat was that opening montage, where I felt like some of those opening scenes of their the Doctor's and Clara's adventures really felt like, wow, I wish those were whole episodes. Like, that's intriguing to me. And he did the same thing. Moffat did the same thing in Sherlock, where you had a couple episodes where, you know, they went through these cases that you're like, wow, that looks interesting. Well, I'd love to see more about that. And then you get into what they really want to show you, which is this character development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this that they're really what they're trying to do is move forward the characters as opposed to give you a fantastic sci-fi, you know, space romp adventure. So the mm-hmm. long story short, I give it a 7.
What about you, Jimmy? How did you like this episode?
I agree with Father Corey and Dom. I think it was about a 6 or a 7 for me. I thought it started off in 7 territory, but I think the ending was weaker, not just because of the cheesy backflip that Danny does over the battle crab thing, but also because I thought that it left it on an unsettled, kind of depressing note with regard to the relationships. I mean, they give us a little bit of a flash of the doctor warming up to Danny, but that's it. And there's still a lot of ambiguity, and that's okay in terms of character story arc, but it didn't come across as particularly satisfying to me in that regard. So I thought it was an okay episode. I'd give it a 6 or a 7.
I would give this episode a 6 out of 10 when it comes to the, let's say, the sci-fi plot. It's just this generic robot pre-programmed, and the only thing it can do is to destroy. And there's a bit.
Oh, if I were judging it on that, I'd give it a 4.
But yeah, I mean, it's super generic. Yeah, well, no, I would say 6 because I kind of I thought the droid or the robot or whatever it was looked kind of cool. Could have been from StarCraft, you know, the video game, and I got a weakness for that game. But in terms of the character development, and especially the way in which they did that and the parallels that are created, there were a lot of moments where I was like, oh, that's clever writing. Oh, that's a nice analogy or a nice parallel storyline. Or there are a lot of subtle moments in this episode, which I always appreciate. They're like hidden gems, and you can look at it, the episode from a story point and be very unsatisfied. But there were enough of these little cool moments in there for me to appreciate it. So on that level, I would give it an 8 out of 10. I'll end up in the middle. It's a 7 out of 10. Speaking of the opening of this episode, we get a few glimpses. And of course, as you can imagine, there are some Easter eggs hidden in there. Starting with the fish people. Jimmy, is that something in the history of Doctor Who? Have we seen these fish people before?
Well, I don't know if we've seen these fish people, but we have seen fish people before. Back during the time of the Second Doctor, there was an episode called The Underwater Menace, which is unfortunately now lost, where the Doctor met fish people. And so you can imagine that that's what that those are the fish people that the Doctor is taking Clara to meet. I love that bit in the opening montage where the Doctor is telling her he wants to introduce her to fish people, and she says, "What are they like?" And he says, "Fish and people."
And just wet. Yeah. And then she returns and she has the, seaweed in her hair?
Yeah. You said it was a freak storm. Go ahead.
My thought with that too was the Doctor's Daughter, where they're in that war where it's, you know, clone after clone war. One side was an aquatic race that had like a breather apparatus. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if it was something like that too.
Could very well have been.
One thing that I noticed in the opening montage, if you look at the front of Clara's door, her apartment number is number 63.
Yeah, good. And I was about to say that too.
That's a reference to the year the show began, 1963.
Exactly.
And we've really, in a lot of ways, and we pointed this out to some degree before, we've come full circle in a lot of ways, because we have now the Doctor's two apparent companions are school teachers from Coal Hill School, and he's there very much like he was at the beginning. And in particular in this episode, when he goes to the junkyard where the robot is hiding, he's actually going to the original junkyard. I mean, it's meant to be the original junkyard where the TARDIS was in the very first episode.
Oh, wow.
And we know that because when he opens the gate to the junkyard and goes inside, he says, "Home sweet home."
Oh, wow. That's so subtle that I didn't even see that. But you're touching upon, a very fundamental element of this particular season, and that is almost this second chance for the Doctor. I mean, he should be done by now, because the number of reincarnations was 12, I think. Mm-hmm. And so he got some extra ones. We don't even know how many. But it's almost as if he is now able to go back to the beginning, as it were. Same school, he again leaves with two teachers, and he can make amends in certain way or do things again in a more mature way. I don't know. It almost seems to me like he's on this quest to rediscover who he truly is and what role he has to play and correct some of the mistakes. Remember, that was a very fundamental thing that they said in the first episode. I've lived for more than 2,000 years, and many of which were failures or something like that to that extent. So it's almost as if he gets a new beginning or a new chance.
By the way, the Artron energies that he refers to are also an allusion to that, because they introduced this term a while back, and apparently Artron energies are something to do with the time vortex that the TARDIS travels through. Yeah. And he says you've had enough of them here over the years that it's what's attracting this planet-killing robot. And so that's an allusion to the fact the TARDIS has been here before, and he's been coming here a lot recently to visit Clara. And he even visited Coal Hill School once, I believe, in the time of the Seventh Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so,
he did.
So we've got multiple appearances of the TARDIS right here, and that's what's drawing the robot.
Yeah, and multiple aliens as well visiting the school. So it's it's definitely something you would think would be part of the at least the unwritten history of the school, that people must know about that, about these rumored stories with aliens in the past and, you know, urban legends perhaps now in the awareness of most of the younger teachers and pupils, but still.
Well, and also it's certainly, and it, you could argue it's even before this, but with the beginning of the 2005 series, they had first contact established with aliens. So basically everybody in London now knows that aliens exist.
Exactly. The Artron emissions, by the way, were also mentioned in the episode The Power of Three, where Kate uses them to track down the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And they even go back to one of the very first Doctor Who stories, episode number 4, The Deadly Assassin. Apparently there was already mention of the Artron emissions. So I love it when they just, you know, don't reinvent technobabble, but they go back to these early sources.
Yeah, the Deadly Assassin actually was a story from the time of the Fourth Doctor, Tom Baker.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that's what that's an allusion to.
Okay, that's probably it says the Fourth Doctor story, but it's the story from the Fourth Doctor. You're right about that. Anyway, it's still old enough for me. I was a kid back then. The Blitzer, by the way, that strange alien, is played by an actor. It's actually an actor inside there, believe it or not.
Who was also CGI?
No. Well, but probably part of it was. But the Jimmy V is the Blitzer. He was also a space pig, believe it or not. And he was also a character called Banakafalata in the 2007 Christmas special.
And the Doctor said, "That's kind of a mouthful. Can I just call you Bala?" And he said, "No," and made him call him Bala Kafalata for the rest of the episode.
There you go. I was really wondering, well, how did they come up with this new name, the Blitzer? No, Blitzer was actually the second name, right? It's Scovox Blitzer.
Scovox.
We've never seen aliens like that before, haven't we?
I think that this was the first appearance of a Scovox, as far as I could tell. Anybody? I don't know if anybody else has any other recollection.
I didn't recognize the name either, so I don't think it had been one of those recurring creatures or somebody who was even mentioned in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But for the deadliest killing machines around, it can't hit the side of a barn. I noticed it shot at nothing except for that policeman.
Yeah, and it has a bit something in common with the Daleks as well. They're kind of clunky, they're slow, but their only mission seems to be to destroy anyway, so who cares?
Well, they're clunky and slow, but always seem to catch up to the running person, so that's...
Of course.
Travel through a second dimension.
Yes.
One of the things that I didn't like about the Scovox Blitzer, other than its kind of comicalness, is the fact that the Doctor tells us it's powerful enough to destroy a planet.
Yeah.
And okay, sure, if it's got a load of antimatter in there, it could be. But I just find that's weak writing to constantly endanger the planet.
Yes.
If it's enough, if we care about the characters, it's enough to just have the characters be threatened and have them survive.
Or London, so, or Europe, or something like that.
Well, even sure, but even just as long as we like the people who and we're rooting for them, it's okay if just they survive. So you don't need to threaten everybody in the world. Mm-hmm. That's something you should only do occasionally.
Well, yeah.
There's a reason for that, though, in this episode, because it highlights the Doctor's role as caretaker of our planet. You know, he's always saving the Earth, and I agree that it's you, when you go to that well too many times, it loses its force. But
And they're going to go to it next episode, so we're going to have two episodes in the row where the whole world is in danger.
Wow!
Exactly. But it's that idea of the Doctor is the caretaker of this planet in particular. He has this particular notion for safeguarding the planet Earth and humanity.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie, what did you think of the whole beginning where we get this overview of Clara's life? Basically, it's about her living in two worlds, and she's like that. looks to me like a life that you can only sustain for a couple of days.
Yeah, and you could tell because she was absolutely exhausted by the end of that sequence. I didn't mind it. I thought it was a good way to show us that she really is trying to balance these two worlds and not very successfully, because it all falls apart at the end when Danny finds out what's going on. But I liked what they did with that. I thought it was a good way to encapsulate what was really going on with what she was trying to do, having a normal life, which is quite impossible when you're a traveling companion.
And she's constantly having to come up with these excuses both ways. Like, she doesn't want to tell the doctor who her lover is or why she goes on all these dates. And she doesn't want to tell Danny that she's actually a time traveler.
Right.
And there was this very symbolic scene. It was one of those visual gems that I thought was very clever, where she's sitting in front of her famous mirror, you know, the one that the doctor says, why would you need three mirrors?
Because your face is so wide.
Yeah. And then you see literally two reflections of her. And it's almost as if she's like, I don't know who I am anymore, you know. And there is another occurrence of a reflection in the end when she's talking with Danny, and he knows now that she's actually traveling through time, and asks her, you know, why are you doing this? And then she looks into her own reflection and it's like, just because I love it, you know, because it's so cool and you discover so many things. It's almost as if at that moment she has chosen that life. She embraces that life instead of trying to live two parallel lives.
Mm-hmm. You know, this idea of Clara as multiple persons, I mean, this has been her role from the moment she first appeared in an episode before she was a companion, when in fact she was someone else completely. This idea of multiple Claras, and we have it, you know, right here in a situation that kind of parallels in some ways the life of many people. We're one way with one person, and we're one way with another person. Are mm-hmm. we the same person at work as we are at home, and that sort of thing? And Clara is kind of embodying this. And one of the questions I asked myself as she asked herself, you know, or she said to herself, I can't do this, I can't do this. And then she says, I can do it, I can do it. I wanted to ask, why are you doing it? You know, what is it? You know, what is it that's motivating you, Clara, to keep living this way, this almost impossible life of this double life of travel through space and time and teacher with a boyfriend? You know, that kind of, she kind of answers it a bit by saying at one point, it's, you know, I see the wonders of the universe of time and space, and you know, who of us wouldn't leap at that mm-hmm. chance, especially if we could do so without, you know, having to leave the life that we live now. But she's chosen, unlike previous companions, to lead a double life instead of moving full time. We've talked about this before. Instead of moving full time into the TARDIS, she tries to maintain this normal life on the side. So it's this interesting double life that Clara is having to live, and we see it metaphorically in her, you know, speaking to herself in the mirror mm-hmm. and in the window.
Well, and I think what I liked about this theme is that it also shows you that you can only do this for a certain time, and then the tension starts to build, and you have to make a choice, or you have to be more transparent, because she's constantly keeping up appearances, and you can't wear a mask if you are journeying with people you truly care for.
I think Dom is very insightful about fact that Clara has chosen, you're welcome, to live a double life in this way, because she could do exactly what previous companions have done, which is go travel with the doctor for a time, not mm-hmm. have the complications of a regular life, and then come back to a regular life. And she's, for some reason, chosen not to do that. Now, I think on the kind of metatextual level, it's because they wanted to make her different from previous companions. Mm-hmm. But the real question is not why does she travel with the doctor, it's why does she maintain this other life at the same time? Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. think they've kind of given us an answer to that now, which is she loves Danny Pink. Mm-hmm. And so that's why she maintains this other life. But mm-hmm. that couldn't have been her excuse in the beginning. So I think that's a fascinating question. And I don't know that they've answered why did she initially mm-hmm. choose that double life.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering too, now that Danny knows, are they going to eventually move like they did with Amy and Rory, where eventually they both do end up on the TARDIS and both do end up traveling with the Doctor full time or mostly full time?
Yeah, whether they move onto the TARDIS permanently, I don't know, but certainly a lot of fan expectations is that Danny's going to be a new co-companion.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. And you have to. It'll make it more interesting because you get this triangle. Because especially the doctor, he needs the attention of Clara. And if she gives her heart to someone else, then that's going to create a lot of, I think, a lot of occasions for some funny, you know, interaction.
Well, and we've also got dramatic interaction on the horizon again, because they put Chekhov's gun right there on the mantle for us. You know, with Danny saying, if you ever lie to me about him not about him pushing you too far, we're through.
Yeah.
So that's clearly something that Clara's going to have to wrestle with in the future.
Fascinating. Now we get this very symbolic moment, I think, of him climbing a ladder and seeing that Clara is letting her pupils read Pride and Prejudice. Two words that I think are very fitting for this new doctor.
Oh, interesting.
Pride and Prejudice. Because this episode is very much about prejudices. And, you know, soldiers. Also, soldiers are like this, and you are like that. And the same, Danny does the same with the doctor. Oh, I know. I figure you out. You're the authority type. You're the aristocrat. You can't really feel for Clara, and you're pushing her too far. And it's all about, you know, trying to overcome these prejudices. And it's ultimately also pride. You know, I don't need to tell you who I truly am. There's a bit of fear underneath, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. But I love that little quote about what was it, the band? Jane Austen being in a band,
right? Because you met Jane Austen and had adventures with Boggins from space, and then formed a band and met Buddy Holly.
Yes. And in Deep Breath, Vastride, I didn't remember this myself, but I read it in the notes on the BBC website, Madame Vastra had revealed that Marcus Aurelius was a superlative bass guitarist, and reflecting that the doctor really knows how to put a band together. So it's these little inside jokes. And there is also, this is the first episode that we hear the doctor briefly mention River Song, that they had this big fight.
Was that a reference to River or a reference to the otters, an otter named River? That was my question as I watched it, because he said, "Oh, I went undercover with some river otters, et cetera, and River didn't notice that I was, you know, that I was undercover, something like that." And I thought, is that River Song, or is that just a clumsy, we made a mistake and we've confused the audience by naming whatever otter he was hanging out with at the time River?
My experience of that was a little different. The way I heard that, he said he spent a month living, and then he corrected himself to say sulking with otters because he and River had a big fight. And so I assumed that River Song and he had a big fight, and then he spent a month sulking with otters.
That's exactly.
That was kind of my impression as well.
Here's what's written on the website of the BBC. The doctor later asks Clara if she wants to see the Thames frozen over. So maybe the time traveling archaeologist is on his mind. The Thames, yes. In A Good Man Goes to War, River revealed that the doctor once took her ice skating on the River Thames in 1814 during the last of the great frost fairs. So I'm not sure.
A few hundred years ago, it was colder, and the Thames River would actually freeze over in the winter, and people would go out on it and have fairs and pull sleighs and do all kinds of things on the river.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's see, what else have we got? Of course, the watch, the invisibility watch. I was wondering, is that something that we've seen before?
Well, we've had invisibility on the show before, but that's the first time I can remember seeing it embodied in the form of a watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was thinking perhaps when they wrote this episode, they were hearing all these rumors about the Apple Watch.
Oh, it could be.
Perhaps when it comes out.
Invisibility? There's an app for that.
There's an app for that. There's one more thing. Zip.
One thing that I really liked about this episode that was a callback is to the moment when the Doctor is trying to kick Clara off the TARDIS and he snaps his fingers to open the door to the TARDIS.
Yes.
And then she snaps hers to close them, and you have this little war of the finger snapping with the doors. And I can only wonder what the TARDIS is thinking as they're working this out.
Yes. And how come why does Clara have that power?
Apparently she's bonded with the TARDIS now. Originally, even the Doctor couldn't do the finger snapping, and they introduced that in the very first River Song serial, where she announced to the Doctor that he could snap his fingers and open the TARDIS doors, and he didn't believe her because it doesn't work like that. But then he tried it at the end of the episode, and it did work for him, and he began to do that periodically. And then in the most recent Christmas special, we saw Clara do it. So she's done it before. Apparently, you know, when they introduced her at first, before she sacrificed herself for the Doctor at Trenzalore, she was not trusted by the TARDIS. And so there was that arc of the TARDIS not liking her. But then apparently after she threw herself into the Doctor's timeline to save him, the TARDIS decided she's a good guy after all and let her do the finger snapping thing.
It's almost like that. What is it? What you have to do with your remote keyboard and the Mac, and you have to synchronize them so that they can talk to each other.
Hey, Siri. Well, I better not do that because my iPad and iPhone will wake up.
Wake up.
Hey, Siri, where you can – don't stop. I just did it.
Just say, okay, Google.
Okay. Yes, I don't have any Android, so that's good. You know, hey, can I bring up something? It's a little callback because if we don't talk about it, then we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to be yelling at their iPods and iPhones because we didn't bring it up, which is this idea of the companions trying to live their own life outside the TARDIS. We saw this actually in Series 7 with that. So the Power of Three, where Amy and Rory were living that life, you know, the home life, and there was that tension back and forth. So, you know, so this, we've seen this before, and so it's an interesting callback to that.
One of the things that's different, though, is that with Clara, unlike Amy and Rory, she has never lived on the TARDIS, whereas they did.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of callbacks, the way the Doctor introduces himself as John Smith is a callback. That goes all the way back to the time of the second Doctor. But it really is associated with the time of the third Doctor, John Pertwee, because during much of his reign, the TARDIS was locked on Earth and couldn't time travel. And so he had reason to try to pass himself off as an ordinary 20th century human much more frequently. And so he would use John Smith as an alias.
Mm-hmm. Even the 10th Doctor has used John Smith when he was undercover in Deathry Vale in the episode School Reunion. So, yeah.
Well, they introduced the Doctor from the very beginning as Dr. Smith. And he was like, what? I don't know that name. You know, he was confused by it, but that's what Susan had given as his name.
Oh, okay.
When she registered at the school. So that from the very beginning, he was Dr. Smith.
Mm-hmm. Well, so at one point in this episode, Danny finally gets introduced to the TARDIS, and instead of doing the whole, it's bigger on the inside, on the outside, it's almost as if they're so jaded now that we'll just say that beforehand. Just, yeah, and it's bigger on the inside than on the outside.
My favorite twist on that is when Clara, in the Christmas special a couple of times ago, first entered the TARDIS, and she looks around at how big it is and then runs back out, runs around the entire thing, comes back in and says, it's smaller on the outside.
And the Doctor almost looks disappointed that she didn't use the line, it's bigger on the inside.
Yes, yes.
I guess that works.
But Danny seems to take it quite – I mean, he stays relatively calm. I was surprised that he wasn't more, you know, shocked or anything.
After you've just been in a laser battle with a deadly robot crab thing, and now you're safe, seeing something bigger on the inside might be a little less alarming.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more taken aback just by finding out that Clara has this secret life. He thinks that she's an alien. So, of course, an alien will have this multidimensional, bigger on the inside box. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the second, that's, you know, that's that's Barry in the lead. You know, she, my girlfriend's an alien.
By the way, speaking of her relationship with Danny and its secret nature, it's secret from the doctor, but it's not secret from the kids at the school in this episode. There's a moment where they're talking and they say, "Do you think the kids know?" And it turns out the kids do know because they've been writing and saying variations on "Ozzy loves the squatty." Ozzy being Clara Oswald and the squatty being Danny Pink, a former member of a squad of soldiers. So that's what that reference is to. And Courtney comes up to her a couple of times in the episode and either says, "Ozzy loves the squatty," or says, "Hi, miss, love to the squatty." And both times Clara has no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah. Well, and the kids have a mind of their own. So, but,
By the way, to touch back on the other romantic thing with Adrian, the other teacher that looks kind of like the 11th Doctor.
Yeah.
There were a couple of interesting things there. I really like it when Clara says, "No, he's just a friend and he's not my type," which gets a reaction from Peter Capaldi because we know that the 11th Doctor was Clara.
It's exactly like that, yes.
Also, this is the second time I've seen this kind of romantic, vaguely looks like somebody else thing done in a Stephen Moffat production. If you look in the third season of Sherlock, Molly, the lab technician who has had a longtime crush on Sherlock, ends up dating a guy named Tom and is even engaged to this guy named Tom who looks uncannily like Sherlock. And nobody has the courage to point that out to her.
Well, there is an interesting joke, I think, hidden in the first episode of this season where isn't it Madame Vastra that does this mind melt with Clara and tells her that there are all sorts of muscular men in her subconscious?
Oh, no, that's Strax doing Strax, athletics, yeah. Or that could be athletics.
You know, it's interesting. Did any of the other previous doctors in this, the new incarnation of the series, reference the previous doctor quite so much? I mean, there are a lot of references to the Matt Smith doctor in these six episodes, and I'm kind of interested why that is. What, you know, where they're going with that? Like, why keep referencing that, you know, that previous incarnation? And I wonder if I'm sensing this insecurity.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's not a deep insight necessarily, but this insecurity in 12 about who he is and his identity, and you know, he hates himself. He's said it many times already. It's a very interesting quirk, which I'm waiting to see where that's going.
I think part of that is also because Clara is a transitional companion. She, you know, was a companion both for the 11th and now for the 12th Doctor, and so it's natural to use her as a kind of transition point where we see her reactions to both doctors, and now that he's changed, how does she react to that? And so that naturally brings up the question of the previous doctor more.
I was thinking of a much more like practical reason for this, and that is when they are writing these episodes and filming them, Matt Smith was still so popular, and the people just were like almost resisting the idea of having to go through another transition to a new doctor. And it's almost like, okay, we'll give you just a little bit of a, you know, flashback to the old doctor just to let you know that we validate that feeling.
Mm-hmm. That can be part of it too.
I don't know. And of course, Capaldi was a bit of a gamble. I mean, he's so different from the other previous two younger doctors that I don't know.
But this is something I've been thinking about with Peter Capaldi's doctor. He's different than all of the other doctors, all of them, absolutely all of them, in one respect, which is he's crazy.
You think?
The other doctors, like number 2 and number 11, could be very zany, and number 4 could be kind of very quirky, but number 12 is actually crazy. I mean, he sees – it affects his perceptions of things. So he's constantly, you know, commenting about he's being flattering to Clara when he says they're the same, they look exactly the same age, you know, implying that she looks older than him.
Yes.
and constantly implying that she doesn't look good when she's actually gorgeous, and he just has a higher level of cognitive dysfunction than any of the previous doctors. It's like he got stuck in regeneration madness, and it's still there in some sense.
I actually quite like that madness.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying this is the first time we've had a doctor who's just off his nut in this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he's.
You know, it's. I think part of that too is you know, a couple times in this episode, you know, he wants to be the rebel, the hippie, you know, which is I think why he bristles so much when Danny accuses him of being an officer. But you know that when he finds out that Courtney's is the disruptive influence, he suddenly her stock goes very high with him. Yeah. Oh well, yeah. Pleased to meet you. And then when the kids, when Clara is admonishing the kids for making a mess of the giant chessboard, he starts whistling Pink Floyd's "Another Brick in the Wall."
Oh, yes. that's great. I missed that.
The overbearing teachers. I mean, those are great, great moments, and they showed that sort of that weirdness in the you know the doctor where he's kind of rebelling against everything. He has flouting all the rules.
I think you're touching upon something very fundamental here. He wants to be a rebel, and I love the whole introduction of Courtney in this episode, and then he even takes them to the stars. You know, he's never done that with kids. Because
Clara's kids in the previous series.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
She babysat.
Yeah, you're right, but not with the secondary character. Not that I remember, at least. But anyway, it's almost as a reward because he recognizes his own, not really who he truly is, I think, but who he wants to be. He wants to be that kind of disruptive influence and that rebel. And the reason that he's so aggressive against Danny is that Danny sees in him the officer, you know, the soldier, the military man, that not the rebel, but the one who follows the rules. And I think that in this episode, there is almost this conflict within the doctor that he used to follow the rules and look what it brought him, that you know, the time war and everything that he did there and the things that he regrets now. And so now he kind of doesn't want that anymore. He wants to be a rebel. And yet he's also constantly triggered by that responsibility. He can't be a rebel. He has to be a caretaker. He's got to be responsible. And I don't know, there seems to be this inner conflict. And he recognizes himself both in Courtney, but also ultimately, I think, in Danny. Because they're very much the same.
You know, he spent all that time at Trenzalore as a caretaker as well. And I wonder if this is that, you know, as you regenerated, that regenerated in a reaction against having to have been that caretaker for so long at Trenzalore, never mind, you know, of Earth, as I'd said before. So, I see that. I mean, he hates soldiers, and as I would say almost as much as he hates himself. And maybe that's why, because he sees himself as having been that authority figure, that soldier. But he has this almost unreasonable hatred of soldiers. You know, we know he hates guns. We know he hates that sort of, you know, killing for the sake of killing and blundering into things that he accuses soldiers of doing so often. But this goes beyond, I think, what we've seen other doctors do.
I think it's self-hatred. He hates the soldier in himself. Mm-hmm. Isn't that why he's so, you know, out of proportion when Danny starts to, you know, play the soldier role and yes sir and definitely am I dismissed, and he knows that soldier is in himself and it's strong and dangerous.
And I love the way Danny tricks him into giving a military order as he dismisses him.
Am I dismissed? Yes, you are.
Danny's stock rose tremendously. I mean, I like Danny anyway, but his stock really rose tremendously with me when he stood up to the doctor in that way and just really skewered him. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if Danny is the most capable companion. I'm going to assume that he's going to be a companion, I guess, but the most capable companion since, I think even since before Rory, just the idea of he's more of an equal with the doctor in so many ways. He's physically capable. I mean, as we saw with his neat gymnastic move over
Cirque du Soleil,
circuiting the robot there, but he's also, you know, he can stand up to the doctor, and he can even, you know, get past him with a clever quip, you know, push the doctor beyond, you know, more so with a clever dialogue than any of the other companions I've seen. Although I have to say that Clara had some really great lines in this episode too. But you know, this Danny is really impressive here.
One of the things that's similar about Danny and Clara is they, in a lot of ways, echo Ian and Barbara, the very first companions, who were also teachers at Coal Hill School. Barbara very much would stand up to the doctor and function as a conscience when he didn't have one. And the doctor pays tribute to that in this episode, where he says, "I used to have a teacher just like you." And then Ian was very much the action man compensating for the first doctor's physical limitations. And he was very competent and very self-assured. He actually was more self-assured than Danny is at this point. But I think they're echoing those teachers because it was such a successful combination. One of the things that I'm hoping, because now that we've got a season set at Coal Hill School, I would love them to bring back the original actor who's still alive that played Ian Chesterton and have him make a guest appearance.
I think you said something about that last week as well, where you hoped he would get like a cameo or something.
Yeah, he's been established by the signage as being the head of Coal Hill School, mm-hmm. but I would love to see them actually bring him back on camera.
Mm-hmm. Who knows?
those were some great lines, by the way, with the doctor. He says, "Why do I keep you around?" And Clara responds, "Because the alternative would be growing a conscience of your own." And he says, "I have a teacher who is exactly like you." And she says, "You still do. Pay attention."
Yes.
great repartee. I love the writing.
And the idea that the doctor, you know, going back to this, where the doctor hates soldiers, or at least he's expressing this hatred for soldiers because he sees so much of it himself. I mean, this goes back throughout the new series, all the way back to the Ninth Doctor. You could tell that was one of the things he hated about himself, is that he had become this soldier. I think there was, as I recall off the top of my fuzzy memory, that there was a line about, you know, a regeneration born out of war, mm-hmm. and that was talked about the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah.
Because of course that was the regeneration, as we saw in the episode with the War Doctor after the Time War had been finished. In the 11th Doctor, there are a couple times where River calls him to task for that, River Song, because was it the one episode where she says that in every planet in the universe, the name Doctor means healer, except one where it means warrior. And it was at a place where he was at, where he fought. Mm-hmm. And it was because this one female soldier wanted to see the doctor because he was such a great warrior, not because he was a healer. And that really cut him at that point. So this has kind of been a recurring theme throughout the new series of the Doctor. This idea of hating how he had become a warrior at one point.
Yeah. Stephanie, were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, I heard something too, but well, let me ask you, Stephanie, about the ending of this episode where we see heaven, this big corridor, and we've been discussing this whole idea of Missy and this afterlife theme, but we haven't heard your view on that or your theories. Do you have like an overarching idea of what they're doing with this?
I really have no idea, to be honest. I've been trying to grasp at whatever they're giving us, but there's just so little to go on. Mm-hmm. They've had it in now like 3 episodes, I think, and there's just been absolutely no explanation. And now it's a different setting with the Missy situation, not the garden, but this white waiting room, which is a different show had done that as well. So I really hope that they're going to give us some more information soon, because I don't know what's going on.
Is it too much of a mystery? Should they give us a little bit more than this? To me, it felt a little bit disjointed almost. Like, oh, they got to do the heaven thing just to remind us. But it didn't really, other than, you know, it was the police officer from the beginning of the show. But yeah, it kind of felt a little bit forced.
They threw it
was really weird.
Sorry.
Dom?
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say it was because it really just occurred to me. They threw another little bit out there, which was, you know, the policeman says, "Oh God," and the guy responds as Missy walks out, "She's a little busy right now."
Yeah.
On my first viewing, I didn't catch that. But on the second viewing, I'm like, was he referring to her as God then? That's a very that's an odd little beat there. So is that where we're going with this? That's an interesting question. Well, it's going to get theological here.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Well, I think that it's ambiguous whether that's intended or not. I think they're being deliberately ambiguous about that.
You're breaking up a little bit. I think your bandwidth is going down a drain. Let's see if that auto corrects itself.
Okay, how's it now?
It's still a little bit flaky. It could just be temporary. But let me just at first ask Father Corey and see if the bandwidth restores itself.
Well, what I was going to say is too. You notice. Just real briefly, the police officer gets up and looks out the window, and he's shocked by what he sees. Now, we don't see anything. All we see is white light.
Yeah. It's cruel.
I'm wondering, you know, so I'm kind of curious if – is that a shock of because he sees this beautiful garden and he wasn't expecting it, or is it a shock because he's seeing something that's so alien he can't comprehend it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I definitely felt that he saw something that at least he recognized, but it was just awe. It's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, let's see if that works.
Of course, Missy is not going to turn out to be God for real. We'll have to see how much do they hint about that. It's interesting that she was described in the production, in the script of episode one, not as God, but as the gatekeeper of the Nether Sphere, which could suggest someone more powerful than her is in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing on religious stuff, there's another example in this of an unexpected religious name. And I don't know why this happens, but in a lot of Peter Moffat materials, even though he's an atheist, a lot of characters end up with unexpectedly religious names. Like in the first River Song story, there's that character, Miss Evangelista.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Paternoster Gang. And in this story, there is one of Clara's students that she's talking about at Parent Teacher Night. He's named Angelina Christodoulou.
Oh.
And Christodoulou is a Greek name. It's not English, so that's unexpected right there. And it means Christ worshiper. This girl is named Angel Christ worshiper.
Wow. That's,
And there's also another religious bit in this episode where when the doctor is talking with Clara after the teachers had their morning meeting, he tells her that she needs to get moving because it's assembly time, and he says, go and worship something. And that's an allusion to a situation in England I hadn't been familiar with, but I researched it. And apparently during World War II, Parliament passed a law requiring schools to have – an assembly in the morning, which included like a brief prayer service. And so this has largely fallen out of use in many British schools, but apparently not at Coal Hill. There's also been some discussion recently of replacing it, rather than having it be a specifically Christian prayer service, with like some kind of spiritual reflection moment, and that would be more open to other faiths. And so that may be what the doctor's referring to when he tells Clara, go and worship something.
Hmm. Well, it's definitely old ways to emphasize the fact that there is at least an analogy between what we see there, that corridor and that garden, and the character of Missy, and now the whatever, perhaps an archangel figure or perhaps a Saint Peter guy who is sitting there at the reception desk. That there is an analogy between heaven, or perhaps it's something that they often do in shows like this, where, you know, the religious concepts or the explanations for our religious concepts, that's all a translation of actually something very different, another universe or whatever. And since we are limited as human beings, we use our religious terms to, you know, give that a meaning, but it's something totally different. So I don't know. exactly what they're going to do with that, but it does give us clues about, you know, what is going to happen in the final episode of this season, because of course this is all preparing the big finale. And the other day I was at a games expo with a couple of friends, and we were afterwards discussing Doctor Who and Doctor Who theories. One of these fellow gamers was like, "Well, I'm pretty sure that Missy stands for mistress, and so she is probably just a female incarnation or regeneration of the master." And his theory was that the master actually uses the TARDIS or a TARDIS to catch these people right before they die. And there are always people in a situation where you could wonder, shouldn't Doctor Who have prevented this? Or shouldn't the Doctor have saved them in a way? And so that this Missy or mistress or gatekeeper for the afterlife is gathering evidence for a, you know, future trial with the Doctor as the accused. And that she will actually be able to blog his access to whatever, you know, future there is for him. So we would get a finale that would be a bit like a courtroom drama or something like that. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, it would have to be, I don't know, that's kind of tricky. I mean, we did see the charred arm of the cop, of the policeman, you know, as his end came. I suppose that could be explained by, you know, it hit a mannequin and charred the mannequin too, or something to that effect.
I mean, doesn't the TARDIS repair stuff like that? The TARDIS does regeneration of arms and legs. Haven't we seen that before with the Doctor?
I'm sure they could come up with a technology to do it, so it's not insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting idea, though. It's something, you know, because I'm waiting for them to kind of address the whole issue of Gallifrey again and the Time Lords and what happened there. And that would be a way to bring all of that back in and put the Doctor on trial by the very world that he saved. And that's really, and it would certainly bring out his own self-loathing that he's been dealing with.
Hmm. What do you think, Father Corey, about this whole heaven thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like that theory of the master doing it with the TARDIS, I don't know if I quite buy it, because like you said, there are scenes that we do see them actually be vaporized or what have you. So I don't know about that per se. It's going to be interesting to see. My thoughts are kind of leaning towards this is going to be have something to do with how the Doctor will end up freeing Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm.
That this nether sphere or whatever it is actually where Gallifrey ended up being trapped. If he has to go through this Missy to get to Gallifrey.
Could this all be about the, you know, who gets to rule Gallifrey ultimately? Who's going to be the king of Gallifrey or the queen? And the Missy is gathering evidence to show that it can't be the Doctor, and it should be her instead, because she, after all, is a better god in a way, a better savior than Doctor Who was.
It's very possible.
Say Doctor Who. That's so really bad form. Sorry about that. The Doctor.
I agree with you. I think that's very possible. That's something like that. I mean, we keep talking about the Valyard. You know, I know Jimmy's mentioned him several times. Is it possible that the Valyard really wasn't the Doctor, but was actually this character, this Missy, in another regeneration or something like that? I don't know. I mean, that's all supposition right now. But it is going to be interesting. I am very interested to see where they're taking it, because it could. You know, it could very well be something like that, where this is a competitor to be, you know, like you say, kind of the prime Time Lord, the first one who saved Gallifrey. You know, yeah, the Doctor locked Gallifrey into this time lock or wherever it is, but this Missy is the one that's going to save it, or at least be the most worthy to save it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a way to put it.
You know, another element for this reasoning that perhaps it's Missy is the master who has a TARDIS, uses a TARDIS to save the people, is that when we see this afterlife, it's always these strange otherworldly situations. It's either a garden that could be just part of the interior of the afterlife. Mm-hmm. Now it's a huge corridor. But again, you could imagine that that is just part of a, you know, the big interior. And then there's this window, and you look outside the window, you see amazing things. Well, I'm thinking the doctor shows Courtney in this amazing vista outside, and she's wowed by it. And then we get this scene where the police officer gets to look outside, and he is wowed. I'm thinking, are they not constructing a little hint here, a parallel? That when we see the finale, we're like, oh, duh, they were in the TARDIS, in a TARDIS all along.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It could be, although because they call it the Nether Sphere, and that's a term they've now introduced on screen. Mm-hmm. And in the Robot of Sherwood episode, didn't they have a map of it, of the Promised Land, that looked like a planet?
Oh.
Yes.
So I'm guessing the Nether Sphere / afterlife, whatever, may be a whole planet or a planet-looking space station or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A Death Star. Yeah. And what about this?
Well,
this
in
one,
a way, yeah. After Death Star.
After Death Star, yes. After Life Star. There was this intriguing detail that we learn that Missy was too busy to talk to the police officer. And she, you know, in the first few times that we've seen her, she was always calm and having tea and smiling and having, you know, all the time in the world or in the universe. And this time we see her like concerned, and she is like almost as if something is going on. And what could that be? Is there a threat? Is there something that she should be concerned about? What is she busy with?
It could just be more arrivals or something.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not pay that off. You could explain that on a metatextual level as just this is a way of working in this guy from the thick of it and having Missy appear, but also keeping her mysterious.
Yeah,
because if we see too many conversations where she's talking happy and crazy with people, you know, it could take some of the edge off.
Well, it definitely seems to be, if you need like a second person there on the station or whatever it is, it almost suggests that, yeah, life is getting busier and she needs some extra help. And
thus we're building towards the finale.
Mm-hmm. The whole soundscape of that particular scene sounded almost like an arrivals hall at an airport, even though you don't see other people, but it has the same kind of atmospheric sounds of, you know, a busy desk and everything, although you don't see anyone.
Was that corridor curved by any chance?
Yes. It curves upwards, almost as if you're inside a big white Babylon 5 space station.
Right, or the one in 2001 A Space Odyssey, mm-hmm. where they have an arrival section just like that on the space station.
And there are fans also on the ceiling, which is kind of strange. If this is in space, why would you need fans?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it almost was trying to look like I thought at least the first scenes with the noise and everything was trying to look like a police station where the officer was being debriefed at a police station.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the phones ringing and crowd noise and everything, you know, people talking as they're working at their desks and what have you.
Well,
that was kind of my initial impression.
And it was almost as if that was done to make him feel at home or at ease. He doesn't even realize, I think, that he's dead at first or dead, or, you know, that he's no longer on Earth.
Right.
And that slowly starts to sink in, and he's like, what? And he looks outside the window, and intriguing. But they do a good job kind of reminding us of that there is a bigger mystery, so keep watching. And that's, of course, what we're all going to do starting next week with another episode of Doctor Who. And that particular episode is called Kill the Moon. And I am
Shakespeare reference.
Is it now?
Yeah, that's Romeo and Juliet. It's like arise, O sun, and kill the envious moon.
Oh, interesting. Well, we've had some literary references in this episode as well. So let's take a listen.
Hello, Earth. We have a terrible decision to make. An innocent life versus the future of all mankind.
Whatever future humanity might have depends upon the choice that is made right here, right now.
Decision made.
I gotta tell you, that looked fantastic. Lots of reminiscences of Alien and
space spiders. Why does it always have to be space spiders?
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Thank you, Indy. By the way, some people have pointed out that in the trailer and in some of the publicity photos for next week's episode, there is an astronaut that looks a lot like Courtney Wood, only a little older. And so I'm guessing they're right, and because I've looked at the pictures, and I'm guessing they're right. And I'm guessing that the doctor's encounter with Courtney in this week's episode inspired her to enter the astronaut program, and we're going to meet a future version of her next week.
Good point. Maybe. Good point. I'd love that. A little bit of time travel combined with space and the moon. And I think there was even a space shuttle or something like that on the moon.
it would also be fascinating to have a future Courtney meet Clara Oswald, because it would be like, oh, I remember you. You were time traveling back then, back when you were my teacher.
It just – I think this is going to be an awesome episode. I just feel it. Let's wrap this particular show up. Stephanie, where can people find you?
You can find me on twitter.com/angelstaph, A-N-G-E-L-S-T-A-P-H. And my podcast is at tvrewindpodcast.com.
And you must be very busy right now because, of course, the fall season has started. Lots of new shows or new seasons. Are you keeping up with all of them?
I'm keeping up with most of them. I'm keeping up the ones that I know are going to be solid. Other ones I avoided. So I've been reviewing the ones that I've been enjoying quite a bit. So
besides
new shows that I reviewed in the last episode, and I'll have some more next week as well.
Besides Doctor Who, what is currently your most favorite television show? What should we watch?
Probably Once Upon a Time. I haven't watched the new episode yet, though.
Well, thank you for that segue, because it lets me introduce a new season of a podcast that we've been doing for a couple of years now, and that is called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. It is a podcast series with very similar to this one. We get together with a couple of fans, and we discuss at length every single little detail and Easter egg that is hidden in this wonderful series. And it seems to be all about, you know, references to the fantastic movie Frozen, so we're going to have a lot of fun. That's also on SQPN, the website of the StarQuest Production Network, and you can go to sqpn.com or directly to onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and we'll record that episode tomorrow, actually, after this show, because there's a new season. Father Corey, where can people find you?
Usually you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram as Fr. Corey Stica, and last name is spelled Sticha. And I'm also become a regular on SQPN's Catholic Weekend, which you can find at catholicweekend.sqpn.com.
Absolutely. Jimmy, where can people find your Doctor Who blog?
They can find that at letswatchdoctorwho.com, and they can also find me and all of my other stuff I do online at jimmyakin.com. Yeah, that's J-I-M-M-Y-A-K-I-N as in Nancy.com.
And you seem to have your own little paternoster gang secret society. Tell us about that. What is that?
it's called the Secret Information Club, and what it is an email service that I operate where I send out fascinating information by email to people, and it's about the Catholic faith. So if you're interested in learning things like how did Pope Benedict interpret the Book of Revelation or things like that, you can sign up at jimmyakin.com or at secretinfoclub.com.
And there is also the occasional discussion about aliens and space-related stuff. So definitely, highly recommend it. It's a great service, and you do a great job making all that Catholic content accessible in a very entertaining and interesting way. Dom, where can people find you? And Dom is muting himself, or he's gone. That's
oops, sorry.
Oh, there you go.
It's interrupted, and so I didn't want to get everybody confused. You can find links to all my social media and all my other links at betnet.com, BETTNET.com, and also at the Secrets of Star Wars podcast, which we have a new episode of recently.
And we need to record another one. again, because there is some very tantalizing leaks and little hints. I love that show. You can find me also on the web. Of course, I'm Father Roderick on Twitter. And you can just go to sqpn.com, and I'm hosting quite a few shows there. My main show is called The Break. It's a weekly show recorded on Saturday. I've got another one called Geek Priest and way more shows coming up very soon. So keep an eye on sqpn.com. And just a reminder, if you buy anything at the Amazon store and you want to support us, we would love it if you could go to our website first, click on that Amazon banner, and then Amazon will actually give us a small contribution. Another way in which you can support this show is by going to the iTunes store. And if you are subscribed to this show, you can leave a review, which we absolutely love because we do this for you. We thrive on your feedback, and you can help us do even a better job by telling us what you like. If you don't have time to write a review, even a rating, just, you know, a couple of stars would definitely bring this podcast to the attention of potential new listeners.
When will I see you again?
Soon, I expect. Or later. One of those.
This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.